I think denuclearization is a lost cause. I think it, at most what you could hope for at this point is a freeze in the program.
1 week into the Winter Olympics, but is a warmer relationship with North Korea possible? It's Friday, February 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, a UN report on Afghanistan says thousands of civilians have died there. SUVs make a big comeback in the auto market. And a Chinese-American artist designs a new stamp to commemorate the Year of the Dog. It's all on today's VOA Asia. And we want to start by wishing those of you who are celebrating the new year a happy new year. South Korea's Olympic outreach to North Korea has raised some concerns that Seoul is willing to overlook human rights abuses to improve intra-Korean relations. At the same time, there are questions as to whether the recent U.S. focus on the repressive nature of the Kim Jong-un government is meant to justify increased sanctions or even military action to end the North Korean nuclear threat. At the National Assembly in Seoul this week, some opposition party members criticized South Korean President Moon Jae-in for not confronting Kim Yo-jong, the sister of Kim Jong-un, and ongoing human rights violations in North Korea when he met with the North's delegation to the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics being held in the South. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said earlier this week in an interview that the United States policy of maximum pressure would continue until Pyongyang abandons its nuclear program.
Nothing will change until the day comes that North Korea permanently abandons its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs and ceases to threaten the United States of America. It's accurate to say that we want to make sure North Korea understands us.
By facilitating the North's Olympic participation, South Korean President Moon has helped achieve a temporary pause in provocation. Since late November of last year, Pyongyang has not attempted any missile or nuclear tests. In the 2 years prior, North Korea had fired more than 25 missiles and conducted 3 nuclear tests with the expressed goal of developing a nuclear-armed intercontinental ballistic missile that could target the U.S. mainland. Ken Gauss, the director of International Affairs Group at the Center for Naval Analysis, told VOA's Victor Beatty the so-called charm offensive by North Korea has dual purposes.
The charm offensive is designed to both drive a wedge between the United States and South Korea, which is any time North Korea engages the South, that's kind of a given. But they're also trying to relieve some of the pressure of the sanctions regime, and hoping that what they see as the weak link of that sanctions regime is South Korea and its progressive leadership under President Moon.
Pence told Axios that regardless of the North-South talks, there's no daylight between the allies on the need to intensify pressure on Pyongyang. Do you agree with that?
To an extent. I think they both ultimately support the United States and South Korea, both support the need for denuclearization. I think South Korea may be a little bit more forward-leaning about engagement and potential for what could come out of engagement than the United States. I don't think the United States has much expectation that the North Koreans are going to give anything on their nuclear program. And the United States is probably right. Denuclearization is not going to happen, I don't believe. I think the United States believes that that can only happen through maximum pressure. And I think South Korea believes that a combination of maximum pressure and engagement is more likely to achieve results. My own view is I think denuclearization is a lost cause. Denuclearization, from North Korea's point of view, has been off the table, really for all intents and purposes, since the early 1990s. I think at most what you could hope for at this point is a freeze in the program.
That's Ken Gauss speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. On Thursday, the senior U.S. diplomat for Asia, Susan Thornton, said she understood that the Trump administration had no strategy to mount a preventative bloody-nose strike on North Korea. Thornton told senators at her confirmation hearing that the United States is open to talks with North Korea, but that any such engagement would have to be about one issue, North Korean denuclearization. We invite you to read more about our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and on the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. China welcomes the Year of the Dog with a traditional New Year celebration in Beijing. North Korean cheerleaders are tightly controlled to prevent defections at the Olympics. U.S. cautiously welcomes Pakistan's actions against sanctioned terrorists. Afghan Taliban pen open letter to Americans calling for dialogue. Kansas Congresswoman introduces a bill to help Bangladeshi immigrant. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The United Nations reports more than 10,000 civilians in Afghanistan were killed and wounded last year. Lisa Schlein tells us from the launch of the report in Geneva by the UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan and the UN Human Rights Office that a large portion of the deaths were due to suicide bombers and improvised explosive devices, with women and children high among the victims.
The report presents a mixed picture. On the one hand, it notes the number of civilian casualties have decreased by 9% compared to 2016, when civilian killings and injuries reached record highs. On the other hand, it says suicide bombings and other attacks using improvised explosive devices rose significantly last year. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell says the number of civilian casualties has gone down because the U.S. and other pro-government forces are taking greater care to avoid civilian areas when launching airstrikes and mortars. She tells VOA that suicide bombings and other indiscriminate attacks by anti-government forces, however, are having a chilling impact on the daily lives of the civilian population.
Afghans are being killed while they've been traveling on buses, while they've been praying in mosques, just walking past a building that may be targeted. So basically, the conflict is all around them, and that is what is so very worrying.
The report attributes 65% of all casualties to anti-government forces. It says pro-government forces caused one-fifth of civilian casualties, while Afghan national security forces are to blame for 16%. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, KP Sharma Ali has been picked to become the new prime minister of Nepal after leading an alliance of two communist parties to a sweeping victory in recent parliamentary elections. Ali was named to form a new government after the results of last November and December's votes were made official late Wednesday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday morning. You might not be familiar with the name Kam Mak, but you have probably seen his work. In 2008, the Chinese-American artist was selected by the U.S. Postal Service to create an annual stamp through 2019 for its Celebrating Lunar New Year series. As Heidi Chang tells us, the Year of the Dog stamp is his latest, and Mak says it highlights some of the holiday's traditions.
As lion dancers entertained the crowd, the U.S. Postal Service unveiled the Year of the Dog stamp in Honolulu. The design by New York-based artist Kam Mak depicts three stalks of lucky bamboo.
In Chinese tradition, three lucky bamboo symbolize first, bless and luck, second is long life, third is wealth. I also include the pasting of the folk characters, and that means blessing and luck.
The late Hawaii artist Clarence Lee designed the first series of Lunar New Year stamps, which featured the animals in the Chinese zodiac. In 2008, Kam Mak began designing the second series, which highlights some of the holiday's customs and traditions that have endured throughout time. The Year of the Dog stamp also includes Lee's original paper-cut dog in the upper left corner. The Postal Service issued the first Lunar New Year stamp in 1992. Among the stamps Mac has designed, his favorite is the one for 2010, the year of the tiger. It features Narcissus flowers.
It was something that my grandmother would cultivate right before the Lunar New Year. And as a little boy, I always watched her doing it. And the fragrance from that flower always remind me Lunar New Year is coming. And always bring back really fond memory, you know, being with my grandma.
Mac's family immigrated from Hong Kong to America in 1971 when he was 10 years old. His parents worked long hours and low-paying jobs to support the family. His father as a dishwasher in a Chinese restaurant, and his mother in a Chinatown sweatshop. Mac struggled to learn English, growing up at a time when Chinese gangs were rampant in New York City's Chinatown. Fortunately, Mac got involved with a city art workshop, which encouraged inner-city youth to explore the arts. That's when he discovered his passion. Now in his 50s, Mac lives in Brooklyn and teaches painting at New York's Fashion Institute of Technology. He also has illustrated numerous books and authored his own picture book called My Chinatown, 1 Year in Poems. Through an organization called Behind the Book, Mac helps mentor young people and shares what it was like growing up in Chinatown.
A lot of these kids are mostly Latinos and African-American kids in inner city. I had lectured in Brooklyn and in Harlem. And so besides reading them the books, I actually, you know, take them out to Chinatown and have them experience all the things that I experienced growing up. I think it's fascinating for these kids because everything they saw was all new to them. So I just want to stir their imaginations and want them to really learn about other cultures besides what they only know in their own neighborhood.
Whenever he's speaking at community events, Cam Mack says he hopes to inspire people to be proud of who they are and not feel ashamed if they're different. For VOA News, I'm Heidi Chang in Honolulu.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Pakistan has criticized as extremely unfortunate a new U.S. report labeling the South Asian country's weapons a continued threat to regional American interests. The global threat assessment notes that Pakistan continues to produce and develop new types of nuclear weapons. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. High gas prices and poor fuel economy led to the decline of sport utility vehicles, or SUV, sales in the United States in the mid-2000s. But now, as Kane Faribault tells us from the 2018 Chicago Auto Show, whether you're in the market for a Lexus GX, a Toyota Sequoia, or something else, SUVs have made a comeback.
The key to a successful business is providing customers with what they want. Automakers at the 2018 Chicago Auto Show say what customers want are sport utility vehicles or SUVs.
2017 was a record year for Ford SUV sales. We sold almost 800,000 SUVs.
Dan Jones is Ford's SUV communications manager for North America.
We've actually grown our SUV portfolio 25% in the last 4 years. So all the signs are there that the Ford SUV portfolio is really booming right now. And we're going to capitalize and ride that wave.
Ford isn't alone.
Trucks, SUVs, and crossovers, we're growing 15%.
Tiago Castro is Nissan's director of trucks and commercial vehicles. His company's Rogue SUV promotional tie-in with the Star Wars film franchise comes at a time when the model, some versions equipped with some self-driving features, is a bestseller for Nissan.
Over 400,000 units last year for the Rogue lineup.
The SUV segment is incredibly hot.
Trevor Dorchies is a product manager for SUV brands in the Chrysler Fiat Company, which weren't just on static display at the Chicago Auto Show.
We've got sway bar disconnects down here at the push of a button.
Potential customers have an opportunity to ride them through an indoor obstacle course that demonstrates performance in challenging terrain.
I think gas prices where they're at right now has actually helped Jeep Grand Cherokee and Durango sales. Cheap gasoline means folks want to get a bigger SUV.
One thing that's really changed in the last few years is actually the competitiveness of fuel economy on SUVs compared to cars. So people aren't seeing a huge walk now in terms of MPG improvement or a range improvement from a car to an SUV. It's less of a compromise.
Sedan sales are down in the U.S. by more than 30% as customers flock to SUVs. But Jones says evolving needs and tastes factor in as much for customers as gas prices.
The millennials, you know, the biggest cohort of consumers were coming to the age where they're starting to have children, starting to have a little bit more money, wanting the higher seating position, preferring all-wheel drive. So SUVs have really just taken off.
While automakers retool and shift production lines to keep up with increased SUV demand, the National Automobile Dealers Association, or NADA, predicts overall new vehicle sales for 2018 may drop. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
This news from VOA Asia. A new study in the journal Current Biology says Borneo's population of orangutans plummeted by more than half since 1999. Illegal hunting of the critically endangered apes, along with habitat loss from chopping down forests, led to that decline. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Friday. In the United States and around the world, many poor people don't have access to smartphones. However, as Michelle Quinn reports, a Silicon Valley company is offering phones to customers in the United States and Mexico who pay in installments. If they don't pay, the phone is turned off remotely.
So these are some of the phones that we have available for PayJoy at the moment. So the way that you could get PayJoy, or that you qualify for PayJoy, is if you have a Facebook, a phone number, and a valid ID.
Many of Itzel Delgado's customers at this California mobile phone store are poor, have bad credit, or may be undocumented. A good smartphone allows them to use Facebook, other apps, and make Skype calls. Through a company called PayJoy, Delgado can offer a higher-end phone on a payment plan. A customer provides a Facebook profile, a phone number, and some sort of official ID. It's up to PayJoy to decide how much it will finance the phone, and then the customer picks a payment plan. PayJoy's secret sauce? Technology that remotely locks the phone if a person doesn't pay.
They come back the next month, they pay it, and their phone's back on again.
This customer is on his third phone from PayJoy, an S8 from Samsung. A line cook in Silicon Valley, who is undocumented and doesn't want his face shown, he says he relies on his phone for everything, including watching fights on YouTube in his spare time.
PayJoy started in the U.S., really focusing on the underserved, underbanked population, people who don't have access to credit. We work with immigrants from all over the world coming to the U.S., and we work with Americans who are just outside the financial system or haven't built up that credit history. And they can afford, $10 a week, and they can get a great smartphone. And really, for PayJoy, we say, welcome to the 21st century and get on all the modern apps and internet and everything that you and I have.
If a customer stops paying, they can return the phone without penalty. But if they do pay off the phone, they can qualify for even better ones. PayJoy makes its money by charging monthly interest in addition to the price of the phone. One day, PayJoy hopes customers may be able to use their phone to finance other purchases.
So I think we'll never put locking software on a TV, but once the customer gets the smartphone, they can potentially use that smartphone, either buying the smartphone with PayJoy or just collateralizing an existing smartphone to finance TV or sofa.
Already in the U.S. and Mexico, PayJoy plans to launch this year in Southern Africa, Southeast Asia, and India. If it succeeds, people worldwide will have access to better phones, but also a new way of financing may be born. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
If you don't know who the Black Panther is, after the next couple of days, you probably will. Ryan Coogler's superhero film Black Panther, based on the Marvel comic, and starring Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, and others, is about a king of a technologically advanced country. His superb fighting skills are enhanced by his mystical powers and vibranium-crafted Black Panther suit. As VOA's Penelope Pulu tells us, the film, which cost more than $200 million to make, has created a buzz worldwide for its cinematography, special effects, great cast, and especially for its homage to African culture.
Let's go, go.
The story is set in Wakanda, a small fictional African nation that hides a big secret. Built on vibranium, the Earth's strongest metal, Wakanda has the technology and power no other nation has ever seen.
Determines what happens to the rest of the world.
After his father dies in a terrorist attack, T'Challa, played by Chadwick Boseman, assumes powers of the Black Panther and becomes the new king. Filmmaker Ryan Coogler has created a contemporary African superhero.
What makes the Black Panther the Black Panther? And obviously, you got the political responsibility. You know, you got the suit. You know, you got the claws. You know, you got the strength. We got the fact that he's African. Like, that's the thing that makes him unique.
The film raises the risks and benefits of an advanced country's political isolationism. Should Wakanda share its power and technology with the rest of the world, or hide and protect its resources from outsiders?
It's my responsibility to make sure that Wakanda does not fall into the hands of a person like you.
The film's storyline and black superhero have captivated the imagination of audiences worldwide, says Lupita Nyong'o. She plays Nakia, a Wakandan spy and T'Challa's love interest.
We have here a Marvel Universe that is unapologetically black, and to see us occupy an African country with kings and queens and warriors, and it's so inspiring. It's an aspirational nation that really just kind of is rejuvenating to the human spirit.
In a VOA interview, Black Panther producer Nate Moore and costume designer and Oscar nominee Ruth Carter said everyone on the film wanted to create a movie that showcased a proud, beautiful, and intelligent black culture.
Typically in cinema, when you see Africa, it tends to be stories about poverty and stories about resources being stripped. And here's the country that in our world is the most technologically advanced in the world. That's a great kind of an example to show to kids.
Carter's colorful garments reflect African tradition and empower its characters, especially the women.
Wakanda forever!
They are actual fighters. They are generals. They are. They have weaponry. They wear armor. But then we did it in a beautiful way, so the color is enhanced. The armor looks like jewelry. Their harness, as I call it, wraps the body in a certain way. They pay homage to their history.
Moore says the acting cast and the film's creators paid attention to every detail.
We went to great lengths and had cultural advisors, and a lot of our cast is from Africa. Even our dialect coach, Beth McGuire, and all of our cast members wanted to sound African. And again, at the same time, I think African-American audiences, there's a lot to pull from. And hopefully there's some inspiration, again, about learning about the roots of where African-Americans came from.
Show off.
Whether it's the film's messages about black pride or women's empowerment, this highly anticipated movie is also set to break the box office record in the superhero movie universe. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and on SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. And be sure to let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and you can email us, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aydin Okut. And again, for those of you celebrating New Year's on this Friday, Happy New Year. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.